a place in a world at a time when people were downloading podcasts.
Hey, you gotta listen to this, man.
One.
Oh my god.
Oh my god.
Stood alone.
I've never seen anything like it.
Cause it had.
What now?
Something big.
What? Who the hell are you?
Hallier and Hemmo. Dig Flicks.
Welcome to Hellier and Hammo Dig Flicks. My name is Justin Hamilton. It's a very special podcast today. I'll let my main man, Peter Hellier, introduce our first guest.
Our first guest on Hellier and Hammo Dig Flicks has done a heap of TV work. Audiences will know him from Thank God You're Here, also the excellent SBS World Cup Fever. Melbourne radio listeners will know him from Husey and Kate and Ed on Nova Breakfast. He's a fantastic man. He also has made a movie, and he's made it all himself. An amazing effort. It's called Scumbus. It has an amazing, fantastic cast.
Yeah. Are you in it, Pete?
Possibly.
Right.
Hopefully I've made the cut, actually. We're not completely sure, but please welcome Ed Cavalier.
Hello, guys. How are you? Thank you for the canned applause I'm assuming you're putting in afterwards.
I'm sure we'll work something in.
If we can afford it.
Maybe a slide whistle.
A slide whistle.
You know, just so people can't walk into these studios and think they know exactly what sound effects we're going to put in.
Yeah. Why not put in Temple Block Riot?
Matty D, organise some Temple Block Riot for us.
Matt can do it live, he knows it that well. For those who don't know what Temple Block Riot is, that is the sound when Fred Flintstone's running on the spot before his car takes off. That is Temple Block Riot.
I wasn't sure it was a band that I was supposed to know about.
Hey. Saw them at the big day out.
Just a couple of corrections before we start. You guys have done, this is your second podcast, it will be your last, because you called the SBS show World Cup Fever, and Hammo, to say the words World Cup in a row in public costs $1 million.
Oh,
wow.
Yep.
We're in a lot of trouble.
Yes, you are.
Like, I didn't say World Cup Olympic Grand Prix.
We are done.
They would have kicked in the door. And then the other thing is the radio program is not called Husey, Kate and Ed. It is called Husey and Kate.
Oh.
What? There's no Ed in it.
Well, there is one, but he's a silent Ed.
You know what? I've got a Sharpie. We can start fixing that right now.
No, we're good.
In the foyer, because we are recording this at Nova 100 in Melbourne, and we thank them for the space and the microphones and all the equipment. But in the foyer, there is a large poster, and I believe it's got Husey and Kate have been doing the show for a long time. You joined the show a couple of years ago.
I believe it
does say and Ed.
Yeah.
Oh, and I think the Ed is in brackets.
Right.
And it's on a, that part is actually on a whiteboard with non-permanent marker, so it can be removed and the photograph replaced with someone else's face at any time.
Right.
You know, at any moment.
Keeping you on edge.
Yeah, of course.
Has that conversation come up? How often does that come up about, maybe?
You know what it is? I every now and again someone on air will call me Dave O'Neill, which is...
Really?
Obviously somebody doing it from down the line.
No, in another studio.
Listeners.
Right. Every now and again, someone will call. Probably once every couple of weeks, someone will ring up and they'll go, you know, g'day, you know, Paul from Mentone, you're on the line. You know, what would you like to say about, you know, where's the weirdest place your cat's thrown up? And they'll go, yeah, g'day, thanks, good morning, Husey, Kate and Dave. Now, Dave, listen, I was just... I'm like, this is great, I can say what I want, and Dave O'Neill's go to prison.
Again.
Yeah. Back in the joint. Look, the show is them very much, like, it's been going for a long, long time. It's kind of heritage.
It's an iconic Melbourne breakfast show.
Yeah, if you join the
cast
of the cast of Happy Days, it doesn't become Happy Days plus new guy. You know what I mean?
And McGinley. Was that the guy?
Ted McGinley,
yeah.
I love Ted McGinley, who was in the my Ted McGinley knowledge.
Revenge of the Nerds.
Yes, there you go. Thank you. Yeah. Revenge of the Nerds.
He's in Revenge of the Nerds.
Just quickly before we get started on all of the things that you brought up, would you guys like a box office report?
Oh, sure. This is
all right.
Is
so
awesome.
I've just done a look through the box office around the world, and the Transformers 3.
Yes,
Hammo, Dark of the Moon.
Yep, they couldn't afford the side.
No, you do not say side. You guys, this is a litigation nightmare.
We're in so much trouble.
This is unbelievable. Someone's going to start singing Beach Boys music in a second. But this is. All around the world, Transformers 3 is on top of the leaderboard.
Yeah.
Including in Finland, where it's number one with a bullet. Over the weekend, weekend it took $156,000.
Right.
That's adjusted. Yeah. That's adjusted from the euro or the Finnish the currency, and it's been out for a couple of weeks, so it's up to $900,000. But second place, what do you think is in second place?
In Finland.
In Finland.
Bucking the trend worldwide.
Right. Bucking the trend as in this is this, it's not a good film?
No. This film just it's done okay, but it hasn't done as well as it's doing in Finland.
Mr. Popper's Penguins.
No, but I don't think it's out there yet because it hasn't charted.
Okay, that will go very well.
That will go very well.
You think so?
Well, is it Bridesmaids?
Mate, it is not Bridesmaids, but I do want to talk about Bridesmaids in Finland in a moment. It's Bad Teacher.
Oh, really?
That's Cameron Diaz.
Yeah, and Justin Timberlake. So it's struck a chord in Finland. Don't ask me why. But Bridesmaids, Hamo, that you bring up, is all the way down in 16th. I think this is the only country in the world where Bridesmaids hasn't caught on because it's been out for 10 weeks.
Right.
Okay, it's taken $1 million, but Pirates of the Caribbean's been out for 8 weeks and already taken 4. Kung Fu Panda's done the same. So's Hangover Part 2. So they seem to be, of all the places in the world with Bridesmaids, that Finland perhaps has caught on the least.
Right.
I'm embarrassed. You may have noticed my face going a little bit red.
Yeah.
I dated a Finnish girl for a while, and in fact I saw What's Eating Gilbert Grape in Helsinki.
Right.
This is going back a little while. And
dubbed or subtitled?
No, I think it was subtitled.
Oh, you didn't see much of the movie.
Hello.
Whoa.
I watched it all.
Hands off.
By the time I got to Helsinki, the relationship was on the rocks.
It's frosty.
But yeah, I'm surprised they haven't gotten Bridesmaids. They
was
have
it
quite
arty?
A reasonable sense of humour.
Did she have a good sense of humour?
She was funny, yeah.
How old were you when you were going out with this lady?
18.
How old 18 was she?
19 when I was over there.
She
was 43.
Oh, right. She didn't laugh much anymore.
No, she's 19.
One last bit of box office.
We need some Finnish folk music pretty soon just to wrap up the Finnish box office report.
Also, I want to know, does box office affect how you feel about a film?
Me?
Only in Finland.
Only in Finland. Exactly. I'm not seeing that. It does. I'm not going to lie. It does. Of course it does. Because if I didn't like it and it kills, I think that the public are idiots. And they're like, yeah, can you like that when I'm so smart and I like this?
Yep.
And if something that I like does well, if it's not expected to do as well as they thought, I think that I'm a genius and you see I know what the people like.
Yeah. And even if the general public does like it, you like it for different reasons.
Yeah, of course.
So there you can keep
the
superiority.
I like it for one guy that was in one scene that I saw in an obscure television show a few years ago.
Yeah.
I'm looking for people from The Wire in Transformers. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's what a wanker I am.
Where is Omar? Come on, Omar.
you can have one line.
Snoop.
Now Bahrain, the box office in Bahrain.
Mm.
What do you think is number one in Bahrain?
Transformers again? No,
it's
not
Transformers. Transformers is not in the top eight, and that's all that they give us.
Right.
I'm assuming it's not Bridesmaids.
It's not Bridesmaids. Neither Bridesmaids is not in the top eight either.
Yeah.
Would it be Cars 2?
Cars 2 is not in the top eight.
Kung Fu Panda
is not in the top eight. They may be slightly a little bit behind
okay.
us.
Is it maybe Thor? A little bit.
It's Free Willy, the first one. No. So Big Mama's House is at 4
right.
with $955.
That's not the original Big Mama's House. I
no, that's like
that
Father
is,
Like Son.
Right.
Yes. Then Rio is at number 3.
Well, they are behind.
With $1,000 in the past week. Monte Carlo, which is a brand new film, which is the Selena Gomez, the tween film
yeah.
with the guy.
It's not the Herbie film.
No, it's not the Herbie one. Herbie's left Monte Carlo. Now it's just sort of teenage girls. That's got $2,200. And number one with a bullet is X-Men First Class with a whopping $2,700.
Wow.
Hey, that's where they make their money.
They need to start releasing Australian films in Bahrain, because if you make $400 in a week in Bahrain,
yeah.
you're actually doing pretty well.
Things are going great.
People are thinking, we're in the top 10 here. Anyway, that's me
hijacking. I mean, obviously, you're prepared a little bit. Do you often look at the World Box Office?
Every day.
Yep.
And I don't know why. I don't know how he's gotten onto it, but Husey does as well now. So
he's turned it into a competition, hasn't he?
Of course he has.
Yeah.
He and I have been having it. He started when he said the other day, that he believes that Bridesmaids is... He loves Bridesmaids, right? Yep. And he went to a preview before any of us went to it. And so he's been saying, oh, I told you all that it was funny. I'm like, yeah, I accept that. But I had no way of seeing the film to disagree with you otherwise.
Yeah.
So well done. You know, the guys from the moon get back and they say, it's great on the moon. You go, yeah, I'm sure it is.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to get a chance to get up there for a while.
Yeah.
So... And so he said, oh, listen, Ed, Bridesmaids is so girls are liking it more than boys.
Right.
And then I said, all right. And then I thought, no, I disagree with that, because when I saw it, it was 50-50 boys and girls.
Yeah.
Straight away, I thought that was strange because of the way that, you know, it's all girls on the poster. It's, you know, it doesn't look like a boys comedy straight off the bat from the poster, et cetera, et cetera. And that in the early days, I'm assuming that's people were going from the publicity.
Yeah. Yep.
Then I noticed that it's the number one R-rated comedy for girls, they're calling it. It's overtaken Sex and the City.
Right.
And now, I don't know. Did either of you guys see Sex and the City, the first one at the cinema?
Yes, I did.
You did?
I saw the first one, yeah.
All right. Who'd you go with? Each other. Oh, my God.
That's awkward.
My wife.
Okay, your wife. I went with your wife as well.
And that was weird.
That was very bizarre.
I've still not gotten the appropriate answers for that question.
And she never returned my calls because she'd already seen the movie twice.
So there you go. And so who did you see it with?
I actually saw it by myself because I had to review it. So
that's
my story, and I'm sticking to it.
So my point is that no guys, unless they were dragged, and of that there was only a few in number, saw Sex in the City.
Yep.
No men just went along, except for they were reviewers or pretending to be, or they were there with their wife, that they went along and saw this film.
Yep.
And so for it to beat, and so for Bridesmaids to beat Sex in the City,
yep,
surely that meant that the other audience that I had seen, guys, were going along in droves.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. And you know, also, I found that this movie, Bridesmaids, when I've been talking to female friends who haven't seen the movie,
yes,
if you say, oh, you should go and see Bridesmaids, yeah, I've had quite a lot of girls just go, I don't know, it just doesn't really look like
it. It looks
kind
like
of
the
thing.
Hangover, is what they said to me. So I said that to Hughes. He didn't like that. And so we had a discussion on air, and then we went to callers. And so and after that, and then box office. So he and I were both trawling during the radio program. Yeah. We should be concentrating on.
Yeah.
We're both trawling the internet looking for articles to back up our claims. And he's right. In the end, yes, it is a much more. Well, not much more girls are going to see it than guys,
right?
But guys is what has got it over the top,
yep,
of something like Sex and the City, where guys just will not go and see it at all.
Yep.
Well, the fascinating thing about Bridesmaids for me is it's this whole discussion whether it's a chick flick and then who will go and see a chick flick. Funny's funny, and once you're in that cinema, how you could not find Bridesmaids hilarious.
Yeah.
My sister was over the other day. She saw it. She loved it. Mm. And she might get to the cinema 3 or 4 times in a year.
Yeah.
And she went with some. She asked some, you know, some school mums what they thought, and they didn't like it. They thought it was, her words were, pornographic, which I didn't quite get.
Yeah.
There's that opening scene.
Well, you know the scene.
But they love the Hangover.
Oh, that's interesting. That's weird.
That's very weird.
Hang on. So they love the balls out tranny.
Yeah. That was the first build I had. And Bridesmaids,
some reason,
pornographic.
Didn't relate to. You know, and I'm not sure if it's they're particularly women who go for the whole, oh, women just don't make us laugh as much as, you know, guys
could
do.
Could be. You know, sometimes, you know, in comedy gigs, sometimes women can be the harshest audiences on women.
What about I think my girlfriend, Tiff, who she's one of those, she will sit down and we'll watch TV, and I'm flicking around for telly. I need half hour bites if I just sit down. She's the type of person that can sit down and begin watching a movie at any time.
Right.
I can't do that. Yeah. I need to prepare. I need to think about it. I need to discuss it for a few days. Yeah, exactly. All of those things. So, but she was, she said that when we went and saw it, I said, what did you think afterwards, darling? She said, oh, it was really, really funny, but there wasn't much of a wedding in it. So she was saying, because her favourite type of film, she's very, loves romantic comedies.
Yeah.
Here are her list, just compiled the other day, of classics. The top 5 films in the world ever.
Yep.
Yeah? At 5, You've Got Mail.
Right.
At 4, One Fine Day.
One Fine Day.
Yep.
Yep. When I think of Clooney, I think of Syriana.
Yes.
Good Night and Good Luck.
Yes.
And One Fine Day.
Yes, of course. At 3, Along Came Polly.
Right.
I mean, Philip Seymour Hoffman and the sharting, yeah, I must say, I laughed a lot in
the basketball
that scene.
The basketball scene's pretty funny.
There we go. Yep. These are all-time films, classics of all time.
Yep.
At 2, Father of the Bride 2.
Two?
Yes.
Oh, really?
Well, it explored the characters more, didn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly.
It built on them.
Which means it won...
Pretty Woman.
Father of the Bride won.
Oh, God. So Pretty Woman doesn't get a look in.
No, I said, what about Pretty Woman? She goes, nah, as if Julia Roberts was a prostitute. She didn't think that Julia Roberts could have fallen on that hard of times that early in her life. And I was like, all right, not enough reality in it for you. So her anger was, I'm not sure there was enough wedding in it. So then that perhaps that's been, you know, for girls who like that type of girly movie, then maybe that's not enough of that action in it for them. That scene where they all, I don't know, people always say, I don't want to ruin it for people. Who cares? I'm going to ruin it. So in Bridesmaids, there's a bit where they all eat bad Brazilian food. And then they all go and they shit themselves in a wedding dress shop.
Yep.
That scene, the two writers, Christian Wiig and the other lady whose name I forget, they weren't convinced. It was actually Judd Apatow who insisted that that scene be in.
Yeah, right.
Oh, okay, yeah.
That's interesting.
And that's a scene everybody's talking about.
That's what
Absolutely.
I mean.
That's a great scene.
And that was his thing. He said, you need a scene that everyone, the blah, 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 blah.
Yeah. You know, I love reading at the movies. Comments pages. Do you ever go there?
No way.
It's hilarious. Then Bridesmaids is 5 stars and no stars.
Yeah.
And it's just a seesaw back and forth. People calling it pornographic, the most disgusting film I've ever seen.
Yeah.
You know, but then other people just thinking it's completely
I love it when David Stratton reviews comedies. Straight away when he reviews a comedy, he looks uncomfortable. Straight away you can see him going like, oh, I don't know about this thing.
Made me feel weird in my face.
I never forget when he reviewed Kevin and Perry Go Large, which was... Which is this, you know, it's this movie about two, like, it's like a really, it's kind of like comedy company style characters, like very like upfront character.
In Ibiza.
Comedy. These two sort of dorky English guys who think they're cool, they go to Ibiza.
Yeah.
And then it's, you know, cheap gags from Go to Woe. And I really laughed. I really, really laughed at it. I thought it was really funny. And I remember when David Stratton comes in and goes, all right, the next one we got is Kevin and Perry Go Large. And I thought, well, this is going to be interesting. And then I just remember him saying, well, it's stupid. Surely this is stupid. Is this funny? Is this funny? And Margaret going, well, you know, and I thought, you know, that's what's interesting about when people write, when the comments in comedies and all that sort of stuff. I mean, you guys are comedians. You guys are professional comedians, have been so for a long time.
Mm.
How long ago did you stop reading, A, letters to the editor around comedy festival time? Internet message boards.
Yeah. A long time ago.
You make that mistake early in your career. It's a rookie mistake.
Yeah.
I say, you only Google yourself once.
Yeah.
You know? That is... you're right. I got cocky once and I Googled myself.
Yeah.
Because I just started out and I was like, I had a job and I was feeling great and everything like that. And I Googled myself and I found out that I had been voted the 9th sexiest straight man by the Gay Socialists of Australia.
Right.
Right?
Put that on a poster.
Yeah. And I was like, well, Cavalli has arrived. And then there was... And then there was a Facebook page about me being a spunk, and I was like, this showbiz thing is a breeze. And then, of course, it started underneath that. There was a discussion group. It was meant to be a football website, but they were talking about radio and just how truly awful I was. But I never forgot. Anyway.
I remember Limo once when he was doing the Will and Limo show on the M's, and he actually was looking for a quote.
Uh-oh.
And he Googled, and he'd called me, and he said, oh, Hammer, I've just made a rookie mistake. And I said, have you Googled yourself? He said, 4 pages of I Hate Limo.
Yeah,
he read every comment.
You know what? And after a while, they start to make sense. You go, oh, my God, yes.
Well, what I did the first time I Googled myself and I saw, you know, some full-on stuff, I went and Googled everyone else I admire. Like, everyone else who you think, well, everyone loves Rove. Everyone loves Hughesy. Everyone loves Ricky Gervais. Everyone loves Steve Carell. Googled all those people. And the same shit's there.
It's the same person.
It's the same person
writing all that stuff.
You know, we did this thing on the radio a little while ago, and Ash Williams, who's our button pusher, who's starting a stand-up career. You know, he's getting out there. Pete did a lot of work helping him out early on.
Yeah.
And Hughesy's been helping him out as well. And he's one of these guys who has a natural angle. You know that he is funny.
Yeah.
He's a funny
person.
He has a... He made the mistake of looking at... He put just a photograph of himself on the Nova website and out they came. But so what we did is we got this girl on air.
Right.
And they're saying, do you hate Ash? She's like, yeah, I hate him. He thinks he's so good. He's arrogant. He's stupid. He's this, he's that. I'm like, all right, well, do you want to go on a date with him? Let's see if we can get you two together. Let's sort this out.
Yeah.
I bet you'd like him in person. He's so lovable. That's, you can't not love him in person.
Right. That sounds like most of my dates start off.
But you know what? She backed out.
Oh, did she?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
And I was like, there it is. You know what I mean? There it is.
Yeah.
It's easy to go on and, you know, have a swing.
Yeah.
But, you know.
In the dark, in your room, where no one knows, and you just put it out there.
Yeah.
So, moral of the story is, I'm great, and the internet people get fucked.
You know, how do you deal with people, like, if you love a film, right, and you say, hey, I saw such and such, and I loved it, and then how do you feel about someone who then just will rip into the film into it? Because my opinion on it is, if I love it, and you don't love it, you don't have to shove it down my throat. Do you know what I mean? Like, if you come out and say, I hated that film, and I loved it, I'd just be like, oh, okay, fair enough.
Yeah. Yeah, but, I like the debate. I can't help myself. I'm easily baited, and I like, if you know what's one. So all right, so let's say because I go with my girlfriend a lot these days.
Yep.
And it's sort of like sometimes she'll want to punish me, so we'll have to go and see Something Borrowed.
Right.
So we went and saw Something Borrowed, and it hurt.
Yes.
Like, it really hurt.
It's a fucking stinker.
Like, it hurt.
Right.
It hurt in a Kate Hudson kind of way.
Oh, yeah. That's the worst kind of hurt.
You know what I mean? Yeah. You can't get that stench off.
No, you can't. And so I was sitting there, and I always do this if I'm in there with my... I look around for another guy who's been dragged along, and I try and make some eye contact, just so he and I both know that that's what we're living. And we both know why we do it. We love our girlfriends. Yeah. We like them to be happy. But this is going to be fucking terrible, and it's going to take 2.5 hours, and Kate Hudson's going to be in it the whole time.
Yeah.
And he and I both know it. And so when we leave those films, she'll say, what do you think? And every ounce of my being, Hammo and Pete, is saying, you love this woman. You love this Tiff.
Yeah.
And she is so cute. She's smaller than I am, and she's cuddling in, and she's just had a great time taking her boyfriend so she can shoot. Because you know why she takes me to see films? Because she's hoping there are single women in the cinema so she can show me off.
Right,
and be like, sucked in, bitches, I have a boyfriend.
Yeah, that's not just a boyfriend, the ninth hottest socialist.
Yeah, they appreciate that. She's, you know, so she's, and she's really hoping that her sister comes because her sister is single, so that she can really rub it in.
Yeah.
So we're walking out. She's had a victory against all single chicks. I mean, not that they all, you know what I mean? It's not me. It's just that she has a boyfriend.
Yeah.
And she'll be walking along and she'll say, what did you think, darling? And I'm trying to hold back. Yeah. And I'm trying to hold back, and I'm trying to not ruin it for her, but I have to.
Yeah.
I have to say, Kate Hudson, it is the look on her face the whole time and the jokes. I mean, couldn't you see that joke? And I start ripping into it, and you feel, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I know I'm petty.
Yeah.
And I know I'm petty. But it's
hard. But Hudson's a hard one.
But it's 2.5, man. Have you seen Something Borrowed? Either of you seen Something Borrowed?
No.
I've seen Something Borrowed. That's the one with Jennifer.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't handle her.
Don't get me
started. Because after I saw He's Just Not That Into You. Oh, my Lord. Like, you know, she might be good in... she's in Big Love,
isn't
she?
Yeah.
She might be good in that.
She's nice girl. You mean it? You know, she's nice and all that kind of thing, but it's just...
The roles that she plays.
Yeah, it's just that...
Just... They put women's, the women's movement back 35 years.
Desperate for a boyfriend. So I find it hard. I do find it hard to hold back unless I know that I'm being asked it by someone who's looking for some action.
Like,
I got a couple of mates, and one of my mates, he's an actor, Christian. You met him. He was the producer on Scumbus as well. And he's Hammo. He's like he was on Neighbours.
Yep.
And he was on Home and Away, and he's in LA at the moment doing the, you know, he's trying to make it, you know, get a go of it over there, and he's doing well, you know. And anyway, he does this thing to me where he will purposely go and see Tree of Life or something like it.
Yep.
And then ring me up and tell me how important it is.
Yeah.
And how drama changes his life, and he knows that I'm going to go mental at him because I don't think he understands these films.
because
he's just saying it to piss me off.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
I asked someone the other day, what's the best film you've seen in the last year, and they said, well, I've only really seen French films. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Tea with Marguerite.
I afternoons with Marguerite. And they're baiting me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's baiting.
Yeah, yeah, without
yeah.
a doubt.
Yeah, that is.
That's
that
waving
is
the flag at you.
Yeah, I'm just like, yeah.
I did have the pleasure of actually viewing in the cinema with Ed the Justin Bieber.
Oh, you didn't want to go. Admit you didn't want to go, and I dragged you.
Ed actually rang me and said, I really want you to come to see the Justin Bieber doco with me. And I thought, well, okay, well, you know, I guess we can chat about it on the radio as well. So, okay, I'll go along. I actually took a photo of Ed
photo.
In the cinema,
yeah.
pretty much by himself, with the 3D glasses.
The police have that. That's evidence.
But I was
that was 3D.
Yeah.
That was 3D. Oh, his hair was flicking right in your face.
Yeah, it was.
Jeez. But I was pleasantly surprised.
Thank you. Now that is the thing. You know when I learned my lesson? I worked in a video store for 8.5 years, right? Yeah. When I was growing up, that's when I kind of, you know, really
got
started
the love.
Yeah, really started to heavily watch some films. And my boss, who was there at the time, he was a big music nut. So we used to have to watch Beach Boys documentaries all day, every day. And then we could watch movies when customers started coming in. Anyway, upshot of it all is Hanson was out at that time with Bop.
Yeah.
And I remember because I secretly loved the song.
Yeah.
But because I was a teenager and I was trying to be cool, I had to tell everyone that I hated it.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
When I loved that song.
Yeah.
I still do. It is a great song.
Yeah.
And one day he pulled me aside and he said, Ed, you're actually sounding really dumb when you say that because you and I both know it's a great song. Just because they're young and people younger than you like them, you don't have to hate them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you don't have to say you hate them.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. Brendan Cow, actor, and he was the lead role in I Love You Too.
Yeah.
He loves me. He'll DJ. He's one of those guys. And he loves making mixtapes. Like, he made almost every crew member a mixtape and a CD.
Trying to ruin them
all. On I Love You Too. But one thing I love about Brendan is he'll like put some 80s tracks in there.
Yeah.
And he's not winking at you.
He's not being ironic.
Yeah,
no,
exactly.
He
just loves it. He loves it. And I went and saw one of his plays, which is Reuben Guthrie, which was fantastic. And I do believe there's a film adaptation possibly coming with that. And there's some great. I don't think it's Wilson Phillips, but it's like Heart or something like that. One of those kinds of songs. And it works.
Yeah.
It's brilliant.
That's one of the good things about getting older, is that you just own shit.
Yeah.
And you just don't care anymore.
Yeah. You know, but I wish when I was growing, I had no angle growing up. I got no action in high school. That's fine. Oh, actually, I do want to talk about that when we get a chance, because one of the first kisses I ever got was in a film in 1993 that I saw at the cinema.
Ooh.
And so anyway.
Summersby, 93, I imagine.
Well, Summersby.
Summersby?
It was actually Ghost in the Machine.
Ooh.
You guys ever seen Ghost in the
Machine?
No, it's an anime, isn't it?
It's not, but it's not that romantic. Like, right. it's a robot inside a computer that comes to life and then starts killing people. Oh, yeah, but it's sort of, you know what, it's like a mixture of effects and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah,
it's
but,
not a date flip.
Yeah, you mean Ghost and the Machine.
That's
anime. And I went there with a girl and I was so frightened. About 40 minutes in, we bashed teeth together for a little while.
Oh, the clash teeth
but
moment.
But it sufficed,
yeah.
you know, and I'll always remember that film.
Yeah.
And always look on it fondly, you know, because of that moment.
I could raise you a worse date flick, even though you were smashing some teeth with Ghost and the Machine.
Yeah.
But I took a girl once to go see Priest, not obviously the new Paul Bettany
version,
Antonia Bird directed Priest, starring Tom Wilkinson and Linus Roach,
and
about
a
gay priest in England.
But he's like he's gay by night, which made him kind of like a crime fighter.
he's a little known superhero, really fucking up the criminals.
It's a stunning film.
It's a great movie.
You know, I was I think probably 17. She was 16, a bit quite naive and innocent, and
what's he
brought me to? She didn't like the man sex.
What were you getting at?
Here's a little suggestion: dress up differently. You know,
it was around comedy festival time, and guess which comedian I then took her to go see a week later? No wonder I didn't get any action. I was sending out the wrong messages. I took her to go see Scott Capiro.
Now, who is that?
An American gay comedian.
Yes. She's like, tell your parents first. I don't want to know about it.
Took it to a pride march.
She loved it. Something's going wrong here.
Let's get stuck in. We talk about Scumbus, we want to ask you a couple of questions just to set the scene of your movie past and where you're at. What was the first movie you remember seeing?
I saw a Benji film, but I think it was Benji the Hunted.
Was it the one where you stole the sausages from the butcher?
No, this is the one we got left on an island.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and
distressing.
I do remember it being
with a volleyball.
I didn't even have a volleyball to be friends with. So I saw that, which I remember, and I remember loving a lot. And then wanting a dog. There we go. The next film I went to see, for a long time I didn't, because I was massive into TV and I didn't like going to the movies, and I lived in Brisbane and it was quite far away. Couldn't be bothered, basically.
Yeah.
And then I saw the Yahoo Serious, Young Einstein.
Yep.
And I just couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
I was just like, I don't know if there's been other films made, but I would stop.
Yeah.
Because this is it.
Not only was it a funny film, but it also had a great soundtrack. It was like one of the first times I ever saw a soundtrack to a movie and just went, oh my God, all these artists on the same album.
Yeah,
I would love, let's put it out there, I'd love to speak to Yahoo Serious. He's just really, I'm not sure what.
No, he's around.
Has happened.
No, he's around because he made
Reckless Kelly.
And then he made Mr. Accident and then Reckless Kelly.
Yeah.
Right. And then I don't think he's done much from there, but if he's listening, I'm sorry, I'm sure you've done heaps of good work.
Yep. Yes. You're making some money on the corporate scene. I'm sure you're paying the bills, Mr. Serious.
Mr. Serious. Yep. That's how the movie started, a serious film. That was the first thing that came up in the cinema, and you just thought, that is genius.
Yeah, this is going to be good. And then, anything that gets a joke made about it in The Simpsons is all right by me.
Yes.
And when they come to Australia, that's what's playing, a Yahoo Serious Film Festival.
Yes.
And Lisa said, I know all of those words, but that sentence makes no sense.
That's fantastic. What was the first movie that you loved?
The first movie that I really, really loved was when I went to... Oh, I remember the day I was walking home with my friend Christopher Yao from primary school in Brisbane, and the first video shop we'd ever seen opened. Like it was... and they were still... And I remember it really clearly. They were hand-painting the Untouchables on the glass.
Out
the front, when they used to hand paint them.
Yep.
And it was like art. I'd never been to Rome. This was the best painting I'd ever seen in my life.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we went in there and it smelt so new, and it was like a barn. It was like a warehouse of videos. And I couldn't believe it. And I knew that Chris's mum had a video player, and crucially, Chris had like an older brother/cousin over it. I can't remember what he was, but he was going to go and hire a film. So we went and got... It was Rambo or Predator.
Yeah.
Because we watched them pretty close to each other, and we just watched it endlessly.
Yeah. So
good.
You didn't hire the Untouchables based on the pain.
No,
that was
I didn't know it was a movie. I just was like, oh, those guys are cool. You know, it's better go inside.
I think Untouchables I may have bought on video when it first came out, and I may have spent a lot of money.
Yeah, it would have been $114.
That's
how much they were. Videos when they first came out were $114.
I was waiting for it.
Yep.
And then I got it.
Thanks
and
very
that
much.
Wore that thing down.
Yeah. Giorgio Armani did all the costuming on that movie.
Yeah.
Well done. All right, I'll raise you that. Was it Gaultier did them all on Fifth Element?
I think you're right.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. It's only a slight raise, isn't it, really?
No, it's a sideways. It's a sideways step, really. Or a back step, if you will.
Do you have a favourite trilogy? Or, I'm going to expand it, trilogy or franchise?
Yeah, it's Star Wars. It has to be.
Yeah.
If you are a male around 32, around my age, and it's not Star Wars, then something's up.
Well, I think sometimes you get to the point where, you know, often you keep saying the same answer and everyone's got the same answer. You go, I'm going to start saying Godfather.
Yeah.
Which I think Godfather are probably my top two favourite films, Godfather 1 and 2.
But that's your problem. You got three. You can't ignore three.
Yeah, well, Hammer and myself were chatting about this recently. If you're talking about best trilogies, you got to count every film.
The third film's got too many flaws.
Yeah, you just can't. You can't go 2 out of 3, Petey. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and I'll stick with Star Wars as well. I'll say Star Wars. Yeah.
How good is it?
Yeah, it's awesome. Did you see what was the first film you saw in the cinema? Because I always thought that I saw Star Wars and Empire in the cinema, but Star Wars came out when I was 2.
No, you didn't. No,
and then Empire came out when I was 4.
That's what happened.
I saw Star Wars in the cinema. I'm a bit older than you dudes. I saw that. I even saw Battlestar Galactica in the cinema.
Whoa.
It was released in the cinema here. And I have to be honest, Battlestar was, as a kid, as exciting as Star Wars.
No, I totally accept that.
Yeah.
But not as good as toys.
No.
And there it goes.
I got given my auntie got me. She gave me. She thought she was buying me a Stormtrooper, one of those reasonably sized dolls, not the little figurines, but the bigger dolls. And she thought she was giving me a Stormtrooper from Star Wars because I was obsessed with Star Wars. It wasn't from Star Wars. It was fucking Battlestar Galactica.
Oh,
the silver heads.
Yeah.
I wasn't happy with
no
that.
No one cares about them.
No. I didn't. No.
Well, they couldn't move properly. That was the problem. Yeah, they look good, but they couldn't move.
No. No movement.
Have you ever walked out on a movie?
I won't. I will not.
I'm with you on that. I'll sit all the way through the film, because even if something happens at the end, then I get something that I can say, you know what, that movie was shit, but you know what, I didn't mind the ending.
Once I'm there, I'm there. I just I like being there.
Yeah.
So it's part of the fun is just to show up and hang out. So I won't leave. And if I've paid as well.
Yeah.
If I've paid. You know what? I have left a couple of ones that you go to for radio interviews.
Okay. Well, they count.
Land of the Lost.
Right.
Will Ferrell?
Yeah, Will Ferrell.
Yeah.
And what went wrong with that film?
Just too big. I reckon that with Will Ferrell, I don't know, what I think anyway, with Will Ferrell movies, is you get Will Ferrell and he's so likable, and then you stick him in a fairly enclosed environment, a television studio, you know, et cetera, for his films, and then you chuck a couple of other people around him who are also funny, but they're very different to him, and then away you go. And then you just sort of let it bounce around and the thing. But then what happens is when he gets in sort of big open spaces, his big style of acting stops being interesting to look at, and he just becomes a dude standing in a big space being big, and it kind of loses its effect. Like in The Other Guys, when he's outside and they're doing that, it has less of an impact than Semi-Pro, because Semi-Pro had a kind of bigger scope to it, even the basketball court, I know it's a funny thing to hark on, and I think that Land of the Lost has a similar kind of deal. You just didn't get that great sort of enclosed space, so that his energy is really at odds with what's going on around.
I quite like the movie Semi-Pro, but you're right in that the scenes that you love from that movie are the ones when they're playing Russian roulette.
Yeah,
you know, and that's in an enclosed space.
Yeah, exactly. And then when he's in the nightclub, you know, it's like when he's in. I love that scene in the nightclub. Yeah. But all those things like jazz flute and all that stuff from Anchorman, all that sort of deal that people really love.
Yeah.
It's got that feeling of like this crazy force stuck in this little, you know, little area.
Okay.
Yeah, great. Who was your favourite actor growing up?
Well, I liked Anthony Michael Hall from the the John Hughes movies.
Yeah. Why didn't he do the second and the third Vacation movies? Have you ever come across that information?
They changed the Rusties on purpose that was part of the jokes about how the Griswolds always had different kids.
Right.
Yeah. But they were calling Rusty and so forth.
Right.
But he was by far the best of them.
Because they all looked quite different, didn't
they? Yeah, that was the idea. The Rusties and the girls, what was the daughter's name?
Audrey.
Audrey. They were always going to be really different.
Yeah. Right.
That was quite funny.
Yeah. I wasn't sure if it started as a joke or they just went, Anthony Michael can't do the second one.
No.
And we'll make it a joke.
Yeah. Did you enjoy him in Dark Knight?
Yeah, you know what? Sort of unrecognizable, but you go. I'm always happy when people that you like are still working.
Yeah, so am I.
It's just that you go.
It's really exciting.
Just glad to see you up there.
Yeah. Who was he in Dark Knight? I'm not even sure.
He was the news reporter. Yeah. Who gets kidnapped by the Joker at the end?
Oh, right.
Yeah. And I like to think that if I was ever in a position to be making films on any kind of scale, I'd love to do that.
You'd love to do a Tarantino.
Travolta. Just people I like. Go, hey, what are you doing?
Who would be the three people you'd help out? Anthony Michael Hall?
Anthony Michael Hall, I would definitely help out.
Throw a bone to?
It's like what happened with Jason Bateman. I think people just forgot how great he was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then suddenly everyone went, oh, that's right.
That's right. He's really hilarious.
I interviewed Justine Bateman when I was doing radio a few years ago, and I kind of said, oh, how's your brother doing? You know, is he working or is he still acting? And she's like, oh, yeah, he's in this like, really amazing show called Arrested Development. You should check it out. And I was like, okay, that sounds fantastic.
Good luck with that. Good luck with that, mate. Yeah. No, so that, you know, so those are the kind of guys. But I guess by the time I start, if I really sort of get going or whatever, it'll be people who are sort of around sort of now that you think, all right, well, are they gonna kick on or are they not? I'm really happy for someone like Emma Stone, who
she's fantastic.
You know, she's in Superbad, who nails it, and they found movies for her to go and do like Easy A, where she's really great.
And you
go, wow, system works.
Yeah,
well, Easy A is a movie that if you had the wrong person in that movie, wouldn't be a movie. It'd be awful. But she makes that film. She's fantastic.
She kills it. Yeah.
Which actor don't you get? Which actor do you just kind of go, what? Why?
For me,
why does he get work?
For me, it's at the moment, it's the crop of leading men that I think are too girly to be leading men.
Right.
Right.
So when Thor came out, I was like, come on, that's it. look at that guy. He's enormous.
Yeah.
He's masculine. Yeah. He can handle the comedy.
Yep.
And he's
and
got.
And he can smash it with a hammer.
Yeah.
And you believe it.
And girls, like girls are loving it.
Yeah.
Girls
yeah.
are loving it. I feel like with some of the other leading men, you know, you kind of Ryan Reynolds and.
That was the first one I thought of.
And those kind of guys, it's kind of. The girls are just sort of. And like Shia LaBeouf and stuff, like. They're just like, girls are like, yeah, I guess. Like yeah. they're sort of being imposed upon yeah. us.
Well, you know, Shia LaBeouf is, you know, it's quite clearly the, you know, Spielberg's, I think, living some kind of wish fulfillment.
Yeah.
Because he's, you know, everyone can relate to him and everyone kind of knows him. But it's like, you know what? I don't go to the movies to see someone that I don't really like that I might possibly know.
Yeah,
and I'm
yeah.
getting the feeling he might be a bit of a cockhead because he's
certainly playing that card.
He was chatting about how he slept with Megan Fox on Transformers, he's saying he beat up Tom Hardy.
He's joking
on the set of this, the wettest country in the world, I think it's called. And
have you seen Tom Hardy?
Tom Hardy
would
and this
snap
is
him.
This is post Warrior, I think, which is a film that's coming out, the Rocky of cage fighting,
with Joel Edgerton.
Joel Edgerton, which looks fantastic.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if Shy is giving it to Tom Hardy, to be honest.
No.
No,
probably not. No, giving it to Tom.
Yeah, with the fighting. I guess I mentioned.
But yeah, Shia LaBeouf is also he continuously plays characters that I really hate as well. Like especially in that latest Transformers film. Like
Well, I haven't seen that one yet, but I remember when Tom Cruise does. I reckon Tom Cruise does obnoxious really well. Like in his movies, like you just like in Top Gun, what an obnoxious little brat, but he's grinning and he kind of you can almost see that he thinks it's a bit he knows it's a little bit ridiculous and you go all right Tom
do you like Tom
I love Tom
so I love Tom as well and I actually think for somebody who is as big as Tom Cruise he has surprisingly challenged himself quite regularly. If you go back to Born of the 4th of July, and then, you know, there's been many movies. Even Magnolia, of course.
He's really good in Magnolia.
He doesn't mind. He'll jump out there and have a, you know, he'll have a swing. And if you get Tom Cruise, you know he's gonna show up and he's gonna try and he'll be busting it out.
And you know what he does? He surrounds himself with great people. The last couple of Mission Impossible movies, he could surround himself with people who just get the job done and make it all about him. He had Philip Seymour Hoffman as the villain. The trailer is out for Ghost Protocol, Mission Impossible
really 4.
It looks amazing, and the casting that's amazing as well.
Yeah, I watched Minority Report for the first time the other day. And I was watching it and the whole time just thinking, I buy it, Mr. Cruise. I buy it from start and I buy it to finish.
Yeah.
And for a big blockbuster and to carry a movie like that, mate, I'm in.
Have you seen War of the Worlds? With Spielberg?
Yes.
I feel like Spielberg's desire, and I love Spielberg, but, you know, in the latter years, he likes to give happy endings. I feel like he undermined Tom Cruise and that by giving a happy ending with the older son turning up at the end. Because I thought Tom Cruise was really good in that, and the emotional journey of going the dad that no one can rely on to learning some responsibility and losing the son. And I thought, you know what we're going to get? We're going to get a great moment where he's going to see the wife and say, I saved the daughter, but I lost the son. And then you would see, oh, my God, you know, he's really learned this terrible lesson. And then having the son turn up and him just going, oh, fuck, everything turned out all right.
Yeah, and
kind
now this guy.
Took away a good moment for him.
Yeah, I guess, but I think you're right. I think that they can't, you know what I mean, like, I can't imagine what it's like to try and get things past studio execs who are so tuned into certain aspects of things that have got to happen. I love hearing interviews with people like the guy Aronofsky that made Black Swan.
Yeah. Yep.
And he was saying, I heard an interview with him going, you know, it was really hard to get this movie made. It was really hard. And I saw the movie and I was like, yeah, I mean, it ended up doing really well for him.
Yeah.
But I can see why it was pretty hard to get made.
Yeah, could you, off the selling.
Off a script, you're just like, all right, here's a go, ma'am. There's a ballerina and she's hallucinating and it's a horror film. But so it's a ballerina. Also, girls will go. They'll go, but it shows a pretty dodgy. And there's a sleazebag guy. Yeah. There's some Lezzo. Oh, Lezzo. Yeah,
well, that should have been the pitch. But it's Mila Kunis goes down on Natalie Portman.
Yes,
bang.
Then some other stuff happens. We haven't quite worked it out yet.
Yeah. We'll get the 3D cameras out.
Yeah, but what's cool about I guess what's going on at the moment is that they're saying because they won't take a risk like that, and the fighter. That they'll go, all right, you go away and make it yourselves.
Yeah.
And if it's any good, we'll release it.
Yeah.
And so then you're getting, it's forcing forcing people to make cheaper films,
yeah,
and to abandon the sort of mid-range adult dramas that they don't reckon that they'll get the return on.
Yeah.
And so my favourite example, my filmmaking heroes are definitely, at the moment, definitely Lee Whannell, James Wan.
Yep.
Those guys made Saw. They made it for $10. They went over and they made it and they got it made. It went through the roof. They made 7 of those films that they are involved in some way.
Mm. Yeah.
I remember speaking to Lee Whannell once, and he said that at some point they were just sort of hanging on set, and people would sort of lean over their shoulder as they were shooting a scene, going, "Ah, would he Javik Jigsaw and staple his face to the floor with a traditional stapler or with a spring-loaded power one?" And then Lee would sort of shout back, "Spring-loaded, I reckon." "Yeah, thanks, mate, no worries. You know, here's your check for X amount of $1 million." And yeah, after all that, after they went through all of that, they had another idea to do a... You know, they got together with the Paranormal Activity people,
yep,
had another idea to make a film. So guess how much it cost? Guess how much their latest film cost? It's currently almost at like $100 million box office worldwide.
Is that Rose Byrne?
Yeah, Insidious. Production cost on that.
$15 million.
According to Box Office Mojo, I should, give them... That's where I got from.
$15 million.
Hammo?
Yeah, I was going to...
The Saw films have made, $700 million, something like that.
Yeah.
And the top Saw and the most expensive Saw film was still under 30 from memory.
Right.
But if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But I think from memory that was around that mark.
So 25? 1.5.
Yeah.
$1.5 million.
Yeah.
Did anyone get paid? Did Rose Byrne get paid? Did Patrick Wilson get paid?
So my point
1.
is...
1.5?
Yeah,
wow.
I don't know where that might... So obviously there's a split going on back end, blah, blah, yeah, blah, blah, blah. But to go through that whole process and to get studioed up, but to take it through that process of sequel after sequel after sequel,
yeah,
and to make so much cash for it, and then to go back and have the smarts and the knowledge to say, no, we've got a good idea.
Yeah.
We don't need all the money in the world that you're going to throw at us, which happens after people have a success.
Yeah.
The next film, the second album, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
To go back and go, nah, we only need 1.5 to make this. And now that it's killed,
yeah,
it's like they've done even better than they did the first time
around. Yeah. How did you get your movie up?
Oh, my one. Well, my movie never got up. My movie got made.
Right.
Then the difference is that... There's Scumbus is the name of is that there's no the I raised the money privately,
yeah,
right, and at that, and that's pretty, when people say, see, this is funny actually. I had a discussion with a friend of mine the other day who's a producer in New York, and he said to me, don't tell people how much your film cost and don't tell them how you got the money, because it'll add to the mystique of it being great.
Yeah,
let the film speak for itself. And I can't decide whether, honestly, I can't decide whether or not I buy that, because I feel like part of the story of my film is that...
Is the journey of getting it there.
Is that.
Yeah.
Is that, it, I really like it and I think it's great, and it's, you know, it's almost going to get to that in a second, but I feel as though that the honest path of it is I didn't go to, you know, Screen Australia or whoever else it is, not to say that they wouldn't have given me money or whatever, because I don't want to go through a process of... Well, I can make it for this. I can make it for this much, and then you're going to have to da 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 da, and all of a sudden, my little comedy that was going to cost me $50,000 cost $400,000, and we might be looking at cinema, and we're looking at double that for print and distribution, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
And my little idea, which I think is really funny and it has a great cast, which started out as just being, I reckon I can do this myself.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, needs to make $2 million to even be considered that it made it money back.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
And I can't justify that.
Yeah.
You know, I couldn't justify the time.
Yeah.
I don't know how long that's going to take. I've had friends that have gone through experiences with scripts that started out like that.
Yeah.
And they've gone to meetings with 3 people sitting across from them, none of which of these people, none of those 3 have ever even made a film in their life.
Yeah.
And saying, this is what we think of your script. This is how much we think it's going to cost. These are the changes you need to make.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't do that. I mean, imagine you guys are starting out your stand-up career and you're going up to do your first open mic.
Yeah.
And someone... Just before you go on, someone goes on and says, look, here's 12 extra minutes on your opening joke that you're going to need to make this ready for an audience.
Yeah.
I'll never know whether my idea was going to live or die.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also there is the factor that a bigger distributor studio would have said, oh, you know, all those friends of yours who you really love are talented.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe we don't do it with them.
No, and that's true, Pete. But I think what I, so then what was beneficial for me. So for the film Scumbus, Hammo, I don't know how much you know about it. The story is me and another guy, Toby Truslove, who play two policemen, two constables that get sent to, you know, when they have like a dodgy area where there's, you know, a lot of crime and a lot of the residents complain.
Yeah.
They just do this thing. I used to live in a street like this. I used to live in a street where they would sell drugs outside my front door. Right. And twice I have walked out my front door to see human feces and toilet paper on my front step. Right. You know what I mean?
Hughie needs to learn when he leaves, when he leaves a house.
Yeah, exactly.
Just get in the car
it's
and go home.
So competitive.
And
then
find a loo. You know, or use the, I kept thinking to myself, use the garden, guys. You know? Apart from anything else. So, but what they would do when the residents would complain is they'd drive a police van and they just park it there and they'd leave it there for a week so all the drug dealing would move 50 metres each way and then it'd come out and then they'd drive it off again. So what's happened is that we get sent to one of those things. And I'm a very good policeman. I want to do the right thing. Toby couldn't care less.
Yeah.
He's, in his words, he's a musician. This police thing is just my day job. Right. Right? So then it's about us trying to survive a night in this place.
Right.
And, you know, we're under pressure and I want promotion and there's a girl, et cetera, et cetera.
Et cetera, yep.
So get it. So that's the idea of the film, Scumbus. It's called Scumbus because it's a scumbus in a place. Yep. And it's also a nod to one of my favourite films in the world, Short Bus.
And when Ed asked me, I've got a very small cameo in the film.
Yeah,
And he did say, "Do you want to be my film Scumbus?" I was kind of nervous about rocking up and being in an orgy.
But then I told him the people involved, you know. No, so Pete, and you know what, and I would like to talk, you know, I know maybe I'm getting a bit soapboxy, but I reckon that this is a big, there was an article that you put me onto, Pete, in Filmic a little while ago saying that we don't have a lot of vehicles for our very popular comedians in Australia film-wise.
Yeah.
And I thought that's, you know, and I had been thinking that for a long time because I look at the list of, you know, they bring out these scores of the people that they like on TV, top five or wherever, you know, there's a bunch of people who are always comedians, on TV, stacks of comedians, radio, comedians, Australians love their comedians.
Yeah.
And I think of all kind of, a lot of all the art forms like sport and comedians, we're very proud of Australian comedians that people really like.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you guys know that. You go out and you do gigs all the time. You know that people love seeing good Aussie good Aussie comics and stuff like that. But you don't see them in films.
No.
You don't see them.
No.
So Mickey Boy did, you know, Cracker Jack, and then the Boytown a little while ago. Jamal made a couple of films. Tony made Bad Eggs. And then, of course, and then Pete's made I Love You Too a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
There's not a massive amount, and of course the Wog Boys, but there's not a massive amount of people that you know where, to me, that's a walk-up start.
Yeah.
Not only are they funny and people know them, but they're very much underutilized.
Yeah.
So I'm in a very fortunate position that I've worked with Pete, you know, and I've worked with Hughie and Tony, obviously, and Glenn Robbins is in the film.
Great.
As well, just to name a few, you know, off the top of my head. So I'm lucky. I was able to ring up Pete and say, "Here's a couple of pages of script. Have you got an hour and a half? Come down and shoot it. We're shooting in my living room."
Yeah.
Now, if for the film, five locations, Hammo, were in my house.
Yeah, right. You know,
seven if you count my street.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, so that was kind of the way we were doing it. But I think, look, I'm really, really happy with just putting the credits on and stuff like that. But and I reckon what people dig about it is you get great performances out of good comedians, you know, doing something slightly different for them, which is just kind of... when I watch it, I just like seeing it.
Oh,
you know,
it's nice acting as well, isn't it? It's like, because I did stuff on The Librarians.
Yeah.
And it's like, you feel like a bit of a relief, I find, with acting. Because it's like, you know, it's not you generating your own material and it's not you being yourself. It's, you can slip into it and it feels comfortable.
Yeah. It's nice.
What was your favourite part of the project? Was there? I mean, was it the writing? Was it the shooting?
So the way it
was it the post?
Well, so I've enjoyed all of it so far because we've been really very, very, very lucky. Yeah. First things first, I was able to raise a bit of money so that it was going to actually happen.
Yeah.
And then I got Stefan Duscio on board, who was our DOP, who I'd met working with Working Dog on Cup Fever.
Yep.
And then I had a small role in their new film, and he was there as well. So I owe them a great debtitude. You know, mate, they've done so much for me. But the most recent thing is that they introduced me to Steph. Yeah. So because he was a DOP and he had his own camera.
Yeah. He's a nice guy too, isn't he?
Yeah, he's a great dude. Yeah. And, you know, he had the skills and he had someone else and he wanted to do it. Straight away, we were off the bat. So that was fun because it just it became real really quickly, Pete.
Yeah.
Like it was.
Yeah.
So the writing, I would go home after radio and just type away. Yep. And then it was an original idea that Josh Lawson and I had had years ago. And then Josh had gone away and, you know, he's kicking goals in the US.
Yeah.
And then he had to be there and I was here. So, you know, but, and then I'd gone away and wrote this script and I would just write it in the afternoons after radio and then just sort of read it with friends and start thinking about who, if I had my perfect list, who would play the roles and just basically write for them.
Yeah.
And then, Pete, we just, you know, the shooting, we did it in 11 days. It was 80 pages in 11 days.
Wow.
Wow.
So it was breakneck pace.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, but then I always go, oh, you know, 80 pages in 11 days. Let's not forget the castle was shot in 11 days.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So the 11-day film bar is pretty high.
I said Lord of the Rings had, I think, 8 months of pickup shots.
Yeah, right. So, I said to Santa, I go, oh, Santa, man, I tell you, this filmmaking business, it is tough. I've only got 11 days. And he didn't, not in a whoosh way or anything, he goes, oh, yeah, we did the cast in 11 days. And I went, right.
Yeah.
It's like that, is it? So that was a lot of fun. And so, but the most fun, Pete, as you know, and Emma, is that when you're on set and the funny people are saying the lines that you've written and it's coming out funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny, and when we made I Love You Too, it was interesting. I had a really good chat with Peter Dinklage, who's in I Love You Too, and he said, yeah, the best thing about making movies is making them. You know, it's if you are waiting for some award or reward, opening box office weekend, whatever, you're going to be disappointed no matter what you're hoping, unless you're James Cameron, I imagine. But the actual making it is incredible. And Pete said, you know, I mean, he loved the script, and that's why he thought it was like an original take on a romantic comedy. But I think he likes also traveling the world, you know, and that's Sean Connery almost has a kind of a similar thing where he likes traveling the world and
Michael Caine's like that.
Michael Caine,
he just like to work. He says, "I'd rather work."
Yeah. He's got that working man.
He does.
Upbringing.
Yeah.
But you know, it's also when you're making something, it's a world of infinite possibilities, isn't it? You know, it's like once it's made, it's almost like, oh well, now it's done.
Right, until you get to the edit and you realize you don't have all of the coverage you wanted, then the possibility. Abilities come down quite quickly, but we were lucky. We had pretty much everything. There was a couple of shots that focused because we were on the 5Ds, the stills cameras that shoot the high def video. There was a couple of shots that were focusy, just a couple of issues, and so that was when the editor he dived in and kind of saved those, which is nice to see those people do that.
You know? Has there been a moment where you've been, because you're in post now, and I think you've nearly got the
I'm done, I'm just writing the credits at the moment,
right? So has there been a point where you've watched it and gone, wow, this is a movie and I made it? Like for me, it was, I think when we did The Grade.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, where we graded it and all of a sudden it went from, you know, like you still look great. The rushes look great, you know, and all that, and the assemble looked great. But it was when we graded it and you think, oh, wow, it looks really like a film now. It's a movie.
Yeah, man. Like that after we had our first, exactly the same time, we got this Soundwaves on board, this really good sound company who'd just come on. I mean, I am absolutely stealing from them the amount that we're paying.
Right.
I have to walk in there in a barrel and a Hessian sack to make myself look poorer. If I walk in there with something shiny, they own it, you know. Yeah. So they came on board, and after I'd seen their sound mix, that I was like, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
This little thing that I'm sitting at home and then everyone coming on board and shooting it. This is what it is.
Yeah.
You know, it is what it is.
And it's really exciting.
Well, it's great, but I've stopped laughing a lot when I watch it. And I think I'm just used to the jokes.
Yeah.
When I show someone new and they go, oh, this was funny, I was going, oh, yes, that's right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, that's right.
Yeah, yeah. That's the important thing, you know. And then when you watch it with a big group of people, like in the cinema or whatever, it'll be a completely different experience and it'll reignite that.
Yeah, I think so. But it's made for telly, so I think that experience, Pete, will probably happen when we have screenings.
Yeah.
And then I want to do, after a while, I want to get... a couple of the cast and just put on a, you know, put on a night, get a couple of people, couple of the cast, a few people haven't seen it, you know, get an audience who hasn't seen it before,
yep.
Chuck it on and then have a chat and, you know, I just, yep. I love that kind of thing.
Well, you know, when I was in LA last year, Will Anderson and I kept going to the Smod Castle on a Monday night when Kevin Smith was doing the Red State of the Union stuff and he'd have like, he'd have the casting agent on who discovered Ed Norton and people like that and he was just showing little grabs and it was interesting watching him build a momentum to that film. That so when smart. He then didn't they take it to Sundance
and then bought it off himself
for a buck.
Yeah,
and it was like by that stage it was like, what the fuck is going on here? Yeah. But he'd done that just in bit by bit.
Yeah, he's smart. I was thinking about him this morning. He's on my vision board actually.
Yeah.
There's a picture of Kevin Smith there of the kind of the kind of people I want to be like, and he's you know because he's done that. He exactly right. Bought his own film off himself, and then realized that the distribution side of things were tacking on costs to his film that he wasn't being able to make back as easy. So he has built a following over a long time. So he's sort of taking it to the streets.
Yeah. Fantastic. Mate, you have been up since 6 o'clock. So
let's go.
We should wrap up.
But thanks for coming on the show. And
I'm really excited
to see the film.
No, it's called Scumbust. Pete does a great job. Obviously, you can see it on the IMDb. You know, Hughie's in there and Glennie Robbins and Ryan Shelton absolutely kills. Langbrook's in there as well. Sam Toll's just killing it. Toby Truslove, myself, Lockie Hume. If you ever meet Lockie Hume in the street, walk the other way. It's for the best. Henry Nixon, Tony. So, you know, Pete does it and a really good. So much so that I've written a new film with, and I'm hoping that Mr. Helly is going to play the lead.
Yeah,
Hello.
Yeah, it's a story of a young woman's. I don't want to go too much into it.
Sounds sexy.
Have you seen Maria Full of Grace? It's kind of like that.
It's like that, but more pornographic. boys, thank you very much.
No, we can't wait to see Scumbust, and then thanks for joining us. So the first guests on Helly and Hammo Dick Flicks.
Good to be here.
So that brings us to the end of the podcast. If you'd like to get in touch with us, you can email us at helliaandhammodigflicks@gmail.com. Hammo has two M's. If you want to follow us on Twitter, you can go to PJDigFlicks.